Welcome to this special Ignite Your Life series brought to you by Unity Online Radio. What would your life be like if you could live every moment with more energy, focus, and joy? Spiritual coaches Daryl and Ed, Carla McClellan, Reverend Paul John Roach, Janet Connor, Reverend Maggie Oman Shannon, and Reverend Paulette Pipe are ready to show you. So settle in, listen up, and get ready to ignite your life with renewed passion and purpose.
So hello and welcome to today's program in the Ignite Your Life series. I'm Paul John Roach, Senior Minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, and the host of the World Spirituality Radio Show on Unity Online Radio. We explore the unity and diversity in all the world's faith traditions, and I've been doing that now for the last 7 years. It's been a blast. I've enjoyed it very much, and bringing this voice of an awakening world to 114 countries around our beautiful planet. I've also been the senior minister at Unity Fort Worth for 27 years, so that's a long time in one ministry. And I'm honored to be here today. The topic that I'm bringing to you is Ignite Your Authenticity, how being real is the safest and most rewarding way to live. That's a big topic, isn't it? A fascinating one. So ignite your authenticity. We all want to be authentic, don't we? Of course. And the ability to state clearly who we are, what's on our minds at any given time, being honest with ourselves, as a matter of course, are wonderful things to be and to endeavor to be. Unfortunately, it's not that simple, as we all know. Through life experiences and the school of hard knocks, if you will, we have learned to protect ourselves, to be selective in our authenticity and honesty so that we don't get hurt. We have layers, indeed, of protection around us that end up being a confining suit of armor. Sometimes we're not even aware of how defended we are, and we become quite shocked when we realize that that is the case. Many of us are afraid to be wrong. Anybody listening out there that's afraid to be wrong? We measure ourselves against a yardstick of perfection that becomes a hard taskmaster. And if I'm real, I might reveal that I don't know something. Oh, my goodness. That I don't fit in, perhaps. That I'm not smart or attractive enough. And that I just don't like myself. That would be a terrible thing to have to admit. And I must admit that as I start this show, you know, for 7 years I've been doing discussions and interviews with many people, fascinating people. And this is the first time that I've gone solo, if you like, for at least for the first part of the show, because I'm going to invite my wife along in a little bit. But it's kind of scary to be out there just doing it without the feedback of another person. So, but I tell myself it's okay to be authentically me today, and I encourage you as well as you're listening to be authentically you, to be worthy to be here in this place at this time by divine appointment. You know, I remember as a teenager, that fun period in anyone's life, using the term pseudo or poser a lot. We were always accusing other people of being pseudos or posers because I guess we were inherently afraid of being that very thing ourselves. So if it was safe to project it onto another. As adolescents, we were keenly aware of the need to find an identity. And this continues, of course, after adolescence as well. We were struggling to find ourselves, as the phrase goes, our authentic selves. Who am I? It's the eternal question, isn't it? Great masters like the Indian teacher Ramana Maharshi of the past century made this self-inquiry, who am I, the central pillar of his teaching. And many others have done so also from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, the one wonderful teacher whose thoughts were collected in a great book called I Am That, to Byron Katie and her work, from Robert Assagioli in Italy, in his work on disidentification of ourselves from all the various aspects of ourselves until we find the core, and all the way up to Wayne Dyer. Jesus himself, I think, went through the same process of being completely authentic in the wilderness, where he confronted the adverse ego within him, which is named Satan in the Bible. But it's really those parts of ourselves that are afraid, that want power, that are defended, and we have to let them go. We have to move through them and not be fooled by them. It's certainly not about being perfect, I don't think. If we're in a human form, we will naturally have a bunch of foibles and seeming limitations that keep us from being too grandiose about ourselves. And this is a wonderful thing. We don't want to become a megalomaniac, do we, believing our own publicity? So if we're in a human form, we're going to have faults, and that's okay. In fact, here's the kicker. It's being honest about our humanness that is the key to being authentic. And if there's only one thing that we recall from our time together today, that's it. That's the wonderful line that I think makes huge sense. Being honest about our humanness is the key to being authentic. Accepting our humanness with its joys and its sorrows, its tics, and its high points, helps us to take a load off, folks. And in this busy, distracted world we live in, with so many things pushing and pulling us in so many directions, it's a good thing, isn't it, to take a load off. Counterintuitively, allowing ourselves to be present to our human self and its weaknesses or its apparent weaknesses opens us up to the possibilities for our true and spiritual selves to shine forth. There's a quotation by the great Tibetan Buddhist Lama, Kalu Rinpoche, which presents this so succinctly. I first read it in a Tibetan book by Lama Surya Das, and I liked it so much that I found books actually written by Kalu Rinpoche. There's one called The Dharma, and it's a wonderful book of explicating the tenets of Buddhism and Tibetan Buddhism. But what I love about Kalu Rinpoche, and if you see a picture of him, you'll see how beautiful he is with his eyes filled with compassion. What I like is he's pared it down to the essential and simple. And I think we all want this. I was taught in seminary when I was at Unity Village years ago that the two hallmarks of enlightenment are clarity and simplicity, clear and simple. And I think that's what Kalu Rinpoche offers, something that's very clear and simple, because when we get down to it, that's who we are. We are very simple people. And once we realize our oneness, you can't get more simple than that, can you? When everything becomes very clear, it begins to glow. There's an illumination that comes. Anyway, here's the quote. He says, "We live in illusion and the appearance of things. There is a reality. You are that reality. When you understand this, you realize that you are nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. That is all." I love that end. That is all. Let me read it again, because it's quite profound, isn't it? We live in illusion and the appearance of things. I think we'd all accept that we don't see things fully. We're in varying degrees of ignorance, and things seem illusory. Things come and go. Nothing's really stable. But underlying that, there is a reality. There is something that is of the eternal, that no matter how things come and go and change, there is a core that is still and peaceful and reliable. We are that reality because we are intimately connected to everything in the universe. Now, when you understand this, you realize that you as a separate being a nothing. You realize that all these ideas you had about a separate ego or a separate beingness really are not true, because you are part and parcel of the whole. So when you understand this, you realize that you're nothing. But here it is. But being nothing, you are everything. So once we get ourselves out of the way, right? I think that's what it's saying. Once we get all these constructs and these defenses and these layers of protection out of the way, we realize we are everything, and we're one with the universe in that sense. That's all. It's a beautiful place to be. So who am I? I'm nothing and everything all at the same time. I don't have to take it personally. No matter what, it's okay to be me, because I am simply the vessel, the emptiness by which I can be filled with spirit. They say a cup is only useful because of the emptiness within it, right? If it was solid, it couldn't be filled with liquid. And it's the same with us, making ourselves empty in that sense of all these concepts we have around ourselves opens us up to something more wonderful. And isn't that what Jesus discovered when he said, I of myself could do nothing. It is the Father within me that does the works. I've always loved that statement, because obviously Jesus had great self-esteem. He was a powerful being. He emanated confidence and love. And yet he could easily say, of myself, I could do nothing. It's not about me. It's about the Spirit within me. It's the Father that expresses, and the Father and I are one. And this is possible for us all, folks. Jesus encouraged us to follow him into that awareness too, and to discover, who am I? I'm nothing, and I'm everything. And I can be totally fearless and authentic in that realization. We become actually very present when we realize this. We are no longer having to hide, right? We are living in a simple and straightforward way, walking through our lives with real, authentic presence. We don't have to pretend we're something we're not, you know? Our human selves are full of moods and opinions, highs and lows. Hey, let them be. But our core self is calm and radiant and immensely powerful. Robert Browning, the great 19th century poet, called this inner self the imprisoned splendor. And I've always liked that. It's a quote we often use in Unity, but it's beautiful, isn't it? That within us is an imprisoned splendor. And our work is, again, to remove all the shells and suits of armor that protect us from the world, but really they're keeping us from that imprisoned splendor. It's always been here. It's beautiful. And it's the real you. Now, friends, we don't have to work so hard to be real. And that's another thing I'd like you to take home with you. We don't have to work so hard to be real. We can relax. It's much harder, if you think about it, to maintain a concept we have about ourselves than it is to simply let it go and be naturally ourselves. Sri Nagasadatta Maharaj, the teacher that I referenced earlier, called his way the natural way, because he said that really it's more natural than trying to be all the things you think you are. Give you an example. I was born in Wales, and I've lived in America now for over 30 years. I still enjoy being Welsh, and I follow rugby, and I love the beauty of the Welsh countryside. And when I start thinking about Wales, I start talking with a Welsh accent like that. You know, it all comes back. So I love all things associated with the old country. But I don't consider that my identity. I'm also proud of being in America, and this country has given me so much in so many ways. And, of course, it's the birthplace of Unity. And I've found great love here with friends and in marriage. And so it's been a wonderful place to live. I love the countryside here also. And yet I don't identify necessarily with that either, because I recognize I'm a spiritual being on this planet, deeply connected to all beings, having my own flavor and preferences, yet celebrating the flavors and the variety of all of life. And I think that's the thing. To be totally authentic doesn't mean giving up who we are, all our little tics and preferences and the things that we love, but it's also not making them a fetish so that we could only see the good through that. It's celebrating the variety, enjoying that everybody has valid experiences. Do you see what I'm saying? Being in the world, but not of the world. It allows for graceful living, authentic to the particular, and equally authentic to the universal. Folks, being comfortable in our earth suit and in the flow of universal spirit attracts great blessings into our lives, and they often appear in serendipitous ways in the form of wise guidance, in the form of healing, prosperity, and in a sense of well-being. Not being distracted by keeping up appearances or maintaining a bulletproof personality, it gives us more time and energy to be present to what is. You know, so often we spend a lot too much time maybe keeping up appearances, so to speak, trying to be perfect, trying to be defended, and really that's exhausting. I'll give you an example of something that happened to me last week in terms of the way a spirit can speak to us when we can be open to our authentic selves. And I was conducting a meditation in the church service, and it's a meditation I like. It's called A Cloud of Witnesses, where you invite all your family and mentors and spiritual guides who have been influential in your life to form a circle around you in meditation. And usually there's God or Jesus or the Buddha at the far end, sort of looking down on you. And then all around are these mentors, and you see energy passing back and forth between the mentors and you, and then between the mentors and the other mentors, so that there's a sort of a network of beautiful light. And at the end of this meditation, as we were just in that stillness giving thanks for all the people that had influenced us, I invited the congregation to consider a word that may come from one of those mentors that was their word for the week. And the word that came for me was resolute. And thought, this is interesting. You know, I certainly couldn't have worked that one out, because I'd probably have picked, you know, something like peace or love or whatever. So resolute really struck me. Interesting word. I need to be resolute this week. Well, 2 hours later, I received an email from my music director, and the title of the email was Resolute. I thought, oh, this is interesting. And it was the name of a song that a couple of our congregants were interested in singing sometime in the future. And the song was called Resolute. So I listened to it and I thought, okay, the universe is telling me something here. Stay resolute. So it's little things like that that we can miss if we're not paying attention, or dismiss if we think, oh, that's just a coincidence. I don't think it was. I think it was that word was my word for that week, and I put it into practice, and it certainly worked well for me. Don Miguel Ruiz, in one of his four agreements, invited us to don't make assumptions. This is so powerful, isn't it, in terms of being authentic, because it means being open to all possibilities. It gives us a global perspective, like hearing resolute and then seeing it appear. I don't have to judge that. It's a message that I can use to help me. In other words, I don't have to be right about something. I don't have to make up my mind about it one way or another, or make my mind up about another person and judge them and therefore put them in a little box. I can stay open, flexible, and teachable. And when we stay in this authentic place where we're just simply open to wonder, to change, to the joy of things transforming, then things become much more beautiful. I think life becomes a much more beautiful thing in and of itself. Life becomes meaningful. We've all had experiences, I think, haven't we, where the circumstance or the event that we thought was so devastating turned out in the end to be a great blessing. And I know I've had many experiences like that. My first wife died of breast cancer quite a few years ago now. And, you know, I was in midlife. I was just 50 years old, and she wasn't much older. And it seemed like the end of the world, and I felt so moved that, you know, with that my daughter had to go through it as well. And it was a devastating thing, both for me personally and the family, but also for the church, because she was quite a central figure in the church. And yet I also see that it was her time. And although she died of cancer, she was healed, I believe, because she went with light in her heart. She embodied the true spirit of love, and I was a great inspiration for many people. And when now I think of her, I think of her with great affection, and knowing it was in divine order. And in the years following, I met another wonderful woman and feel totally blessed to be married. And one of the things that I love most about my wife today is that she was able to talk with me about Davis. It wasn't that, oh, well, that's your dead wife. Let's not talk about her. Let's forget her. No, it was okay for me to share the sorrow that I felt, but also the joy. And that's, I think, a hallmark of a person who's very integrated and filled with authenticity. So, having said that, I want to welcome Wendy to the show, because, you know, what can we learn and be able to practice in regard to igniting authenticity? There's nothing better, is there, than a trusted friend or partner to help us. And so for that reason, I've invited my precious wife, Wendy, to join me in our ongoing journey together. We've learned so much about each other and ourselves. And I think that's because it's our willingness to be real, even when that's uncomfortable, and having a authentic sounding board in our lives. So, Wendy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
There she is. She's been listening along. All right. So thank you so much for joining us. I thought it'd be great for you to be part of this, you know, this part of the show, because we're getting into some of the ways in which we are able to practice this and looking at some tools, if you like, to do just that, to live the authentic life. So first of all, let me ask you this. It's safe to be honest, right?
Yes.
And if so, why?
Well, it's safe to be honest because it's like if anybody ever had their remember what mom and dad used to say is you tell a lie and then you have to weave the web. And like you said before, it's such a burden when it's relieved to be honest and to be real. And I think that what happens also is that the whoever's around you meets you at that same level. Then,
yes.
They cannot puncture holes in you. And so they meet you at that same level, and who they are and what they're thinking comes out in a different manner.
And, you know, therefore, it's powerful it's possible, I should say, and it is powerful as well. It's possible to be vulnerable, right? Because in that place of being honest and real, there is safety. There's the sense that, you know, going back to Carlo Rinpoche, I'm nothing and I'm everything. You know, I don't have anything to defend. I don't have a distinct set of constructs that I have to protect. I could let go of that. Therefore, I could be more present. I can be vulnerable. I can be open up to my tender side without feeling that it's going to be attacked or destroyed. And I think so many of us are afraid that is the case, so we keep ourselves, you know, protected and hidden. And I think I've really appreciated, you know, going through that with you, you know, of modeling that we can be very frustrated with each other sometimes, you know, and maybe even explode sometimes. But then we can also stop and look and see what's really going on, you know, that's not the reality of who we are, and have a safe environment to do that, I think, is wonderful. I know you. It takes practice, doesn't it? It's just not something that happens overnight.
No, it certainly isn't. And if you can just create that little bit of gap of instead of exploding or instead of going taking something personally or assuming or judging the other person if you can just take that breath and then realize that that everybody has their things to go through, and that it's not all about me, and I didn't cause it all, and that maybe, like, you have your own collective history that you're dealing with that didn't even have anything to do with me, and so we both bring those things to the table, and if we can look at them honestly and authentically, then we can deal with them, and they don't become big monsters. They are just things that need to be dealt with.
Yeah. And that's very important, I think, because when they're not addressed, they do become monsters. You know, they become the proverbial elephant in the parlor, don't they? And it's we know it's there, we don't want to talk about it. And that's the worst kind of inauthentic living, I think, is where we're fully aware that these things are there, but we just don't talk about it. It's like the family secret or the skeleton in the closet or whatever, and it can build itself out of proportion. You know, the more we're unable to talk about it, the larger it becomes, and to the silence is deadening and frightening, I think. It's okay to risk, right? I think it's okay to risk if we remember who we are. It's certainly not okay to risk if I'm putting myself on the line. So, risking it helps us move beyond victimhood. You know, when I was younger, I used to sulk quite a bit, you know, because I think I was brought up by a little bit of a smothering mother, and so I always had to have my things my way, and when I didn't, I'd go into a sulk. And you know, I've examined that over the years and think how ridiculous it is, and I go outside of myself and look down upon my sulking self and think, oh my goodness, that's really unattractive. So, you know, I try not to do so much of that anymore. I guess we learn as we grow older, right?
Mm-hmm, and certainly, and just recognizing that, and then you're not projecting that on another person too. Something about self-trust, though, that I truly believe in is that if we trust ourselves, because we know that the divine spirit within us has all the answers, that everything is available, and it's not us and them. It's not us against the world or me against the world. It is I am part of the world and a viable part of the world. And so then I can trust that divine flow and of information and knowledge and know that that's there. So I don't have to rely so much on the outer world. Not that we all do. Our egos all get hooked, but I don't get so hooked, I think, by the outer world and the opinions of others. And you attract something differently when you're in that flow.
Yes. You know, there's a lovely poem by Guillaume Apollinaire, the French poet, and it's short, but it's very moving, I think, and many of us are familiar with it. I'll read it because I believe it to be true, that jumping off the edge of something, you know, risking the wings appear when we do it, when we jump. They won't appear before. And so often, if we're waiting for the protective wings of spirit to arise, they're not going to do it until there's that need for them. And the poem says this: come to the edge, he said. We can't. We're afraid, they responded. Come to the edge, he said. We can't. We'll fall, they responded. Come to the edge, he said. And so they came, and he pushed them, and they flew. I love that poem. But,
yeah,
you know, there is a little bit of the push in there, too, isn't there? You know, sometimes that nudge from spirit within us pushes us. It tells us things maybe we don't want to hear sometimes, but it's for our own, but in our own best interest to obey that call and to be pushed sometimes. I was sharing something with a congregant this morning in a meeting, and along those lines, that he, in a dark time in his life, he just went into meditation and heard some words from spirit that really helped him, because they were counterintuitive. It was about the burdens he was feeling, and Spirit was nudging him, you know, beyond the pity party, beyond the victimhood, into something more magnificent. And he thought, darn it, I didn't want to hear that. But obviously he did somehow, because his soul was speaking to him and guiding him, and it pushed him into this new life. And that's a powerful testimony to the fact that it's okay to jump sometimes, yeah.
Well, certainly, and, you know, it certainly is. And I was thinking that it, and also what a gift it is to give somebody a platform to be open and honest, to stay in generous heart, and to give somebody that platform to open up. Because when you can explore yourself, then you grow, and more joy is filled in your life. If you're hanging out and fear-based all the time, then you will never see the blessings of the world that surrounds you.
I think we've all had people in our lives that have done that for us. I know I've had you and other people that have pushed me a little bit, and it's been annoying, but it's been wonderful. But I think we may have had a coach, maybe, or a teacher that encouraged us. So they didn't always encourage us by saying, well done, son. They encouraged us by, you know, pushing us, and maybe we're even a little critical sometimes, but it was a creative form of criticism. I remember when I first came to seminary at Unity Village, and, you know, came from Britain, and we're more reserved, at least we were back in those days. And we had all these desensitization exercises, basically a lot of hugging and emotions being shared and everything. And of course, I resisted that tremendously, you know, because, oh my goodness, this is not the British way, the stiff upper lip. But after a while, I realized, why am I resisting? I'm missing out on all the fun here. It's okay to connect in that regard. And of course, now I'm totally into it. I'm a Unity minister, and we like to hug, and we like to, you know, make connection in that way. But, you know, this sometimes, you know, it's uncomfortable at the beginning being authentic to ourselves, and mm-hmm. but we need those nudgings sometimes, don't we?
That's true. You know, I've participated in things that I thought that the group was trying to raise a false sense of something, mm-hmm. And it didn't go well with me. It was like, gee, I don't feel this. That's being authentic too, and being honest with yourself. It's like, hey, this one's not getting me. I can't just create this over, you know, right here and now. Or I think mainly talking about groups that want you to drum up madness or fear or whatever. And it just, you know, I mean, sometimes it just, that's just not it. And it's okay not to go along with the group. Like you were saying earlier about being, you know, we spend a lot of time hiding ourselves so that somebody else might not, you know, can't find out that we're not like them. Well, we're not like them.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to say no. We have to have that power. Yeah. You know, personally, I think the Unity movement is moving in the right direction in that regard, because, you know, it used to be that if you held a negative thought, oh my God, what's wrong with you? You know, or if you had a cold, you must be thinking the wrong thoughts and everything. And it's almost what we call metaphysical malpractice or spiritual bypassing, you know, not dealing with our true feelings, but immediately trying to get into a space of, oh, I feel so positive and everything's great. You know, sometimes it's not great, and to admit that, to own up, as we said earlier, to our humanness, is perfectly fine, folks. It's okay. The mistake we make is when we believe that's the reality and we stew in that and make that be our all forever.
Yeah.
It's the way we feel right now. It doesn't always have to be that way. So, but I think the power of no is great. You know, Jesus had invited us, didn't he, say, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Not just yes to everything. Sometimes we have to say no, and that's important too. All right, we mentioned earlier that blessings are hidden in every circumstance, and throughout the Bible, you know, there's stories of people who had terrible reverses and yet came out on top, and there's stories of encouragement, and the person stayed true to themselves, even though they went through difficulties, and maybe they had growth experiences through that. I think of the story of Joseph in Genesis, where he was thrown, you know, into the pit and then sold into slavery, and yet rose up to be second in command under the Pharaoh, did wonderful things, wonderful works. But then at the end of the story, he was reconciled with his brothers. And he'd learned a lot, because maybe he was a little arrogant and had that self-awareness. He needed the pit experience, perhaps, as we all do sometimes. But there's those immortal words at the end of the story when he says to his brothers, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And I've always loved those lines, because I think they're apropos of everything. If we could stay open to whatever's going on with an authentic embrace, then what seemed to be evil turns out to be good. And God always means it for good, right? Everything is, like I like to say, grist for the mill. So look for the good. Let's talk about some tips that we can use to help us through. I mentioned how criticism can be helpful sometimes.
I think there is a difference in between being hypercritical or criticizing somebody. I think you have to ask, is this for the good of all? Is this for, you know, is this really being honest, or is this because I don't like how that person is? And then it's always up to our own individual self to look at what information is, how the world is reacting to you, because you do have a cause and effect motion going on there. So you have to look at the world and how it's reacting to you. And if somebody's telling you you're being loud and obnoxious all the time, then I think I'd stop and take a look at that and say, hey, you know, or if somebody's telling you you're being hypercritical all the time,
right,
you know, maybe it's time to stop and take a look at that and see if you shift what will happen. If you can dig down in your own self and peel away the onion skin and look at your own self and see what part is mine in here, then you can check it out by how your outside world reacts to you again.
Right. And I think it's okay not to be right sometimes. You know, we don't always have to get it right. And we can take other people's criticism, you know, in the light that it's given. Now, we're not talking about being endlessly beaten up by somebody. That's not valid. But, you know, the idea that I have to defend everything and I can't look at myself could be detrimental. And part of authenticity, I think, is, you know, I don't have to be right. You know, sometimes I am an idiot, and that's okay. I don't have to identify with that, but it's true sometimes. I love the idea that Socrates was the wisest man in Athens because he admitted he knew nothing. And all the other philosophers thought they were, you know, an expert in one field or another. And this made him great, because he was nothing and everything. You know, coming back to the Carlo Rinpoche quote, which I love so much, because to me that's the key that unlocks the conundrum of our lives. You know, it's okay to self-empty so that my cup can be filled to the brim with God's good. As we bring our show to the final section, I want to look at some practical steps or habits that we can use to become more authentically alive. And I'll offer up three, and Wendy, you can jump in on, and you know, on these and see what you think. The first one is to practice being mindfully aware of the present with full self-acceptance. And I know you're very good at this, because you go out into our garden in the mornings and you just sit there and imbibe the scene around, the trees, the birds, and just get so much joy from that. I think it can be as simple as that, can't it? Just to be mindfully aware of what's happening at any given time. And it fills us up with energy for the day.
Reset button.
Reset button. Yeah. I think turning our cell phones off is is not one we do very easily, but I think that's good too, you know, just to be present, to look in someone's eyes. So often we're talking at someone and we're not really looking at with the eyes. We're sort of looking sideways or whatever. And I think it's good, not to be weird about it and gaze endlessly in somebody's eyes, because that's kind of creepy. But to be authentically there, though, and you mentioned earlier, acknowledge feelings and moods, right? If you're not feeling it, just acknowledge that you're there in that place. You don't have to be forced to do something you don't want to do.
Well, I'd rather somebody say to me, you know, I'm really distracted right now, and I want to hear what you have to say, but I'm really distracted. I need to get a space where I can hear.
Yeah,
being honest about where you are, and then you're also giving that other person the platform so that they are heard.
Yes, that's powerful. I think also it gives us the ability to notice how things come and go too. You may not be present for that moment, but acknowledging that we're not present is being present in a strange way, isn't it? It helps us free. If we're trying to say, oh no, all right, I'll listen even though I can't, and that makes us more and more frustrated. So sometimes, again, it's this taking a load off. Okay, I'm distracted, I admit it. And that's part of the freedom right there. Notice also, I think, how you can choose your mood at any given time. You know, you're not stuck in it. Just because you woke up in the morning, you know, grumpy. Sometimes I wake up as Mr. Grumpy, according to my wife. But she helps me. She chuckles and laughs and doesn't take me too seriously. And soon I'm not Mr. Grumpy anymore. So I have the power to choose my mood. I'm not condemned by my my thoughts or my feelings that they can shift.
Well, Charles Fillmore said you have the right to change your mind.
Right. The second thing, practical tip I wanted to go to was create a habit of releasing defensiveness and replacing it with generosity. Because I think the generous heart is the heart that's linked closely to God, because God is the ultimate being of generosity, spirit of generosity. In the universe, and we are naturally generous. I think we've learned to be otherwise. Byron Katie invites us to turn around a thought, you know, that would limit us. And I think we could turn around thoughts of defensiveness and replace them with generosity. You know, it can start with something simple, can't it? A smile. I know you get excited about finding dimes on the ground, Wendy. Because they remind you of being generous, right? It's a symbol of serendipity, the spirit of generosity.
Well, I have a whole story that goes along with dimes that we don't have time to tell, but yes, the dime is a symbol for me, and I find it, and not only have I found it, and when I find them, it reminds me that all is taken care of. But I've found dimes that I've realized I've told my story, and then the person that's sitting there in front of me has said, I needed that story. And so having sharing it brings that person a new opening, and it's the generous thing to do. I think, though, that generosity for ourselves, though, to be there, to be generous, that you need the faith of that divine spirit within you, and the flow, the infinity flow, that when you know that there's no lack, then you can be generous of heart. You can give that person a smile, or you can say, I'm sorry, or you can give them a platform to have a little conniption fit for a minute and not jump all over them because they are.
Right, exactly. You know, also we can be generous to ourselves, you know, use downtime to bless ourselves. For instance, in traffic, instead of being frustrated that I'm not getting where I need to go so quickly, and do we need to go so quickly anyway, but instead just to use it as a meditation time, a time just to reflect, or maybe listen to the music on the radio, or just be quiet for a moment. It's a wonderful thing. I do that quite often now when I'm stuck in traffic, instead of saying, oh, darn, you know, instead, oh, I've got 15 minutes just to relax and center, like you said, push the reset button. The final thing I want to talk about.
I want to say real quick, though, that the world gives generously to us. Though there's many treasures out there, and the world they're free, and the world gives them to us if our eyes are open.
Amen to that. All right, finally, which really is the same as what you just said, behold the beauty and truth in ourselves and in creation. Because when we do, we see that there's so much that's given, right? To praise things, you know, Charles Fillmore says, we expand whatever we praise. So if you praise your pocketbook, or you praise an animal, you praise your wife or your husband, they're good in them, the love in them will naturally expand. And it's linked to stop complaining, which it was just the opposite effect. You know, when we blame or we complain, then all we do is magnify more reasons that there are to complain and to find blaming things. So you have to turn that around by looking for the good. I think looking at sunrises and sunsets is powerful too, because, you know, they're moments of transition between one part of the day and the other, and they often yield very great blessings, the beauty of the sky, the colors, etc. And it makes us feel better when we've enjoyed that, when we've washed ourselves in that beauty.
The beginning and the end of the day, it's like you have an opportunity or a reminder to put your baggage down, to lighten your load.
Another thing we can do is turn off the TV. You know, we habitually have it on. Turn it off. Or get down on the floor with children and enjoy it from that level. You know, get back to the child that's you, and find something good in that. Because there's always going to be joy when you're connecting with that child, whether it be your own child or a grandchild or a friend's child. I'd like to encourage us also to break a habit. You know, if we always get up on a certain side of the bed, you know, just jump over the other side one morning and see what it's like. If we're always making a certain cup of tea or a cup of coffee, drink something else. You know, just break some pattern, because it can show us that, hey, I'm not limited to this. I could do something. You may say, oh, that's silly. That's not really important. But it's the little things that can make a difference, isn't it?
Does that mean you're going to sleep under the stars with me in the blow-up mattress in the backyard?
Went sticking after me to do this, to sleep on our lawn all the time, and maybe.
Nobody
maybe
can see us.
Luckily, we're at the end of the show. I'm on sticky ground here, I can tell. We're at the end of our discussion today on the theme of igniting your authenticity. I want to thank Wendy for being here. Thanks so much for dropping by and adding your insights too.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about the things you've taught me so much, and our relationship's been a wonderful addition to my life, and I appreciate it, and I want to share that with people.
Well, thank you, and I feel the same way. And folks, I trust you've enjoyed our time together, and you've found something helpful in what's been shared. Thanks again for being present, which is the essence of being authentic. And just by showing up to listen to what we've had to say today is an authentic stance. May your life unfold in magnificent ways now and always. So again, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Funding for this special Unity Online Radio Ignite Your Life series is made possible by the support of donors like you. Please consider sharing a gift today at unityonlineradio.org/ignite. That's unityonlineradio.org/ignite. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this installment of Ignite Your Life. Catch the entire series here on Unity Online Radio. Fuel your mind, body, and spirit with inspiration from our life coaches, Daryl and Ed, Carla McClellan, Reverend Paul John Roach, Janet Connor, Reverend Maggie Oman Shannon, and Reverend Paulette Pipe, all on unityonlineradio.org/ignite.